I tell a lot of people that they're like, well, I did all this and this. And like, cool, you just paid your tuition at author school.
Yes, congratulations.
Because it's a business. You're learning this whole business, the writing side, the publishing side, the marketing side, all these different things. And to think that you would nail it right out of the gate on all three of those sort of separate business entities almost is crazy. Like, we're all going to make mistakes and learn from them.
Hey friends, frenemies, acquaintances, and haters, you too. Welcome to the Rebel Maker Podcast, where I, Marty Stotler, the Rebel Queen, your resident publishing maven, and serial entrepreneur, encourages rebellious behavior and rebellious action in women all across the globe. If you believe like I do, then you're in the right place. One, books change lives. Women totally run the world. Collectively, we have all of the answers. And on a scale from one to you just read my damn mail, not chasing that burning desire deep inside you is equivalent to a warm beer on a hot day. This podcast is a rallying call for high-performing women like you with big vision and a bigger will to lock arms and source all the tools we need to succeed for ourselves, for each other, and for the world at large. So cheers, friend. Here's to shortening the learning curve and chasing down those dreams like our livelihood depends on it, because it kind of does.
Mallory, thank you so much for just coming on to the Rebel Maker with me. I'm super excited to talk to you. I have been following you, gosh, for a hot minute, I think I'd say. I have already talked to your wife, Jill, and Jill is absolutely amazing. And I'm like, but wait, there's more. There's the other half. of the writing wives, and I need to talk to you too. So thank you so much for coming on. And I'm just going to just go over your bio so everybody knows like where you're at and where you come from and get the feel of who you are. Mallory Cooper likes to think of herself as a dreamer and a wanderer, yet her feet are firmly grounded in reality. A maker from an early age, Mallory loves to craft things from furniture to cosplay costumes to a well-spun tale. She can't help but to create new things every day. A rare extrovert writer, she loves to hang out with readers and people in general. And if you meet her at a convention, she just might be rocking a cat suit. By the way, I've seen that cat suit. I'm like, one of her own characters, or maybe her latest favorite from Overwatch. She shares her home with a brilliant young girl, her wonderful wife, who also writes a cat that chirps at birds. That's freaking hilarious. A never-ending list of things that she would like to build and ideas. I am so excited to talk to you. Thank you so much for being here.
I almost wonder like what cat suit you see me in, because I have 150. So
okay, well, I'm not sure. Maybe it was just like the nice tight black leather, the patent leather, and I'm like,
oh, okay. That's actually it's actually latex. It's rubber.
I love it. I love it.
I'm that weird person that just wears all sorts of crazy stuff.
No, I don't actually think that's weird. I think you're probably channeling some Kim K or something.
Right?
Yes. Yes. And who doesn't want to
She's younger than me, so she might be channeling me.
It's probably more accurate. You're welcome, Kim. You're welcome.
Yeah, exactly.
So your business name is The Writing Wives, which is how I found you. But I specifically right now, I just want to talk about like your publishing history, because you've got some accolades underneath you. You're like, you're a New York Times bestselling author. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about what was it like to get there? How did you get there? Who did you publish with? How did you get into this? Just tell me all the things. I'm just going to let you go.
Sure. Yeah. Well, like many authors, I've been writing my entire life. Like I think I started trying to write my first book when I was 12 years old. I still have it. It's terrible. And I could never actually finish a story, to be honest. Like I would write and write. I didn't really understand structure and plot and flow and like how to make a story interesting until, believe it or not, I wrote a Buffy season 8 fan fiction book, which I lost. I'm so bummed about that because I really enjoyed writing that. And that was the first time I ever got to write the end in a story. And that was the first time first lesson I learned about writing and publishing is that getting to the end of a story is really empowering. And so after I did that, I'd always been writing fantasy and always been trying to write fantasy. And then I went and saw Firefly, the movie the Firefly movie by Joss Whedon. And I was like, you know what? It would be so cool if there was a ship like this of ne'er-do-wells, but a woman was the captain instead of a man.
Thank you. I totally agree.
Yeah. So, and it's a funny side note, by the way, so I write a lot of stuff like that in my books. And a lot of men will show up and they'll be like, women actually aren't violent and wouldn't do things like this and wouldn't be in the military and stuff like that. And I'm like, actually, the most feared and powerful pirates of all time have been women. There was a, I can't pronounce her name, so I won't try, but she was a Chinese pirate and in the 1600s, and her pirate fleet was larger than the Chinese Navy. And eventually the Chinese government had to buy her out because they couldn't actually stop her.
I had no idea.
Yeah, the most powerful pirate of all time. There's this Moroccan pirate who she was like, her husband died and her brother-in-law took over the throne and was treating her badly. So she went and became a pirate and just raided his ships and stuff like that. And was like one of the most feared pirates in the Western Mediterranean and whatnot. So
sweetest revenge.
I know, right? You should look it up sometime. There are amazing stories of these pirates. And of course, there's the greatest one is Grace O'Malley, who gave birth on the ship of deck of one of her ships and then fought in a battle on the same day. That's pretty serious. Yeah.
She is the rock star.
Yeah.
Oh, I couldn't even imagine.
I don't know how, I guess it's do or die in a lot of cases. So you literally. So I created this ship with this main character who was a woman who was like, had a lot of secrets and whatnot. But she was a pirate and was running a lot of stuff. And then she actually found a person in her cargo. So like someone was actually had her smuggling another person. And that's unlocked this whole mystery that kicked off these stories. And so I wrote that book and I was like really happy with it. And I started shopping around for agents. And I soon came to realize that I might die before I get this book actually published, because just the process of getting an agent was taking years.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question?
And sure, yeah.
Because listen, I run across people all the time that they're just holding out for a traditional publishing deal.
Yeah.
And they don't understand that they don't just seek you out, that you have to have an agent to represent them. Mm-hmm. So how did you go about trying to find an agent? Did you talk to anybody? Was anybody even like remotely willing to take you up? Can you just talk about that specific process?
Well, I think back then there was like a book, I can't remember the name of it, that was like, it had all the markets, like the Writer's Market book or something like that. It had all the agents, all the markets. So I was just basically going through agents in there that would publish science fiction. And one of the things I came to realize too is that agents won't represent a bunch of books that are too close to each other, which makes sense because it'd be a conflict of interest for them to do that. So even if you found an agent that was perfect, if they were shopping a book like yours, they wouldn't take your book even if they loved it. So in 2012, after trying for 3 or 4 years to get this book published, simultaneously to that, I thought maybe it'd be more marketable if I wrote the next book in the series. And I started writing the next book in the series and I realized I needed to know a bunch of characters' backstory more. So I wrote what I thought was just going to be one backstory novel, just to familiarize myself with the characters. It turned into a trilogy. And so while I was still seeing if I could get someone to pick up this first book I'd written, I ended up publishing in 2012 that the first book of the backstory stuff, the book name was named Out System. And we published it on Amazon because Jill had recently done it. You should go ahead and try this too. So I did. And we did everything wrong after publishing our books, me more than her, and sold like maybe 500 books over the next 4 years. But then in the middle of June through August of 2016, we started to really figure out how to market our books and how to put the books in front of the right people. And we went from making like a couple hundred bucks a month to making $25,000 a month by the end of the year. So it was a really wonderful boost. And I ended up saying that book that I was going to let a publisher publish for me, I'm going to do this myself because I'm pretty sure I would not be making that kind of money with a publisher.
No, you would not.
Yeah. So I went for it and the rest is history. I've since written and published for myself 127 books, fiction books, and about 7 or 8 nonfiction books. And I think Jill's
freaking wow is all I got to say. That's a lot of books under your belt.
It was, yeah. I had the inspiration. I thought, okay, I've got the inspiration. The readers are buying my books. I'm just going to write as much as I possibly can. So the biggest year was 2018. I did 44 books in 2018. So I got to the point where I could write 10,000 words
a
day.
A week.
Yeah, I could write 10,000 words a day. And just bang out books. So I was writing this 80K book in just a little bit over a week. So it was...
Holy shit, that's huge.
It was wild. I would never do that again, but I don't recommend it either.
Never say never.
Oh God, I hope I don't do it again. That was a hell of a year.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't even imagine. Like sometimes I have trouble writing a freaking social media post. Like I can't imagine banging out 10,000 words.
Yes, it was basically wake up and write and then take a little bit of time to hang out with the family in the evening and then continue to write until I passed out.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Like it was wild.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you something, because you said something that I want to go back in. Two things, actually, that you said that I want to go back and talk to you about. So the first thing you said is that when you guys published, you did everything wrong. So I'm just going to ask you both of these at the same time, because I don't know, just because maybe you can answer one and not the other, or maybe they're both in the same time. So I'm curious, what things did you do wrong that you're like, oh, hell? And then the second thing is, how did you determine, and maybe this is part of what you did wrong, how did you determine, what did you do to put it in front of the right people? What did that process look like?
So the first, I didn't have a lot of contacts in the indie publishing world at that point, but Jill had a lot of friends who were indie published, and most of them were romance and urban fantasy authors. So when my book came out, I just said to all these people, like, hey, do you guys want to mention my books? And all your, because a bunch of them ran like blog tours, which were big back then, all sorts of things. And so basically, I just figured that, hey, maybe people will just read this science fiction book, not thinking too much about where I would find those people. And so what happened, of course, is my book got put in front of a bunch of people who don't read science fiction. And then if any of them did actually buy it, it would screw up the also bots on Amazon. Because Amazon looks at, when someone buys your book, they look at other books that person has bought, and then they'll recommend your book to those people. But of course, if they're a bunch of urban fantasy and romance readers, and then suddenly the science fiction book is put in front of them, they're not going to buy it. And Amazon cares about conversion. They can only put so many books in front of people, be it via email or just in search results or whatever. So they want to put books in front of people that sell, not books where people go to the details page and don't buy. So they will basically squash books that don't convert well. And I didn't realize that. And once you train Amazon to show your book to a certain group of people and it fails, you have to do a lot of work to reset it and cause it to start showing it to the right people by basically sending a whole lot of the right people to the book and having them buy. And we did that via Facebook ads. It was a big thing. I was working as a software architect at the time, so we had the money to just basically throw $5,000 to $10,000 at Facebook ads. And once we figured out how to make them work and just drive tons of traffic to the book. But that can be done without spending quite that much money. I've worked with authors since in getting their books fixed without spending $5,000 to $10,000. But it worked out really well. We certainly made our investment back.
Well, listen, I tell people all the time, I'm like, I have paid dearly in money for every lesson that I have learned.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah. I tell a lot of people that they're like, well, I did all this and this. I'm like, cool, you just paid your tuition at author school.
Yes, congratulations.
Because it's a business. You're learning this whole business, the writing side, the publishing side, the marketing side, all these different things. And to think that you would nail it right out of the gate on all three of those sort of separate business entities almost is crazy. Like, we're all going to make mistakes and learn from them.
Yeah, it really is. And I totally agree with you. And it's when I'm having conversations with authors too, I'm like, listen, this is not, you're going to write your book, we're going to publish a fabulous book, and you're going to sit back in the recliner and collect all these royalties, because it does not work like that.
Nope.
And it's a huge misconception. And I'm like, listen, you're an author, you are a small business owner. And that's exactly what you're going to be doing from this point forward.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. 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 I say this to a lot of people, that this is a business. If you want to be a hobby, that's cool. But if you actually want to make money off of it, then it's a business and you have to treat it like that.
Yeah, exactly. So let me ask you this, the New York Times bestseller, I want to go to that. I want to talk about that. Which book made that bestseller list and what did you do to get on that?
So I did what a lot of people consider to be cheating. I got in with a bunch of authors and we did an anthology. People still do this for USA Today, although I don't know if they do anymore, because I don't know if USA Today still does their list. There was a big kerfuffle where they got rid of their editor. I don't know if they got anyone new. I haven't followed up on it. But yeah, so what you would do. So one of the things I learned early on is that the New York Times bestseller list is a little bit, it's totally gamed, actually, where basically the major publishers go around New York and try and figure out where the NYT people are going to go that day. And because they go and check numbers at different stores. So they just go and buy a whole bunch of the books that they want to have rank well. It's like, wow, that's cheating. I don't live in New York. I can't go buy a bunch of my books at some random Barnes and Noble or something like that. But what a lot of authors would do is they'd get together 12 authors or so in an anthology, price the anthology at 99 cents and then market it for 6 months. And then when it goes live, you would have a ton of sales and you would be able to hit the bestseller list. So I was in the last one that New York Times did that with. They stopped allowing indie authors to rank with anthologies. We hit number 3 on the NYT list in January or February of 2017. And ironically, we were 7 on USA Today. We were actually lower on USA Today, which was weird. But it's funny because people are like, well, you guys just, you gamed the system to do it. I'm like, well, everybody games the system to do it. But also we worked really hard. Like we sold like 35,000 copies of that book. And it was, and the other thing too, is you have to, Amazon doesn't report the numbers. So you have to get all of those sales on the other vendors. or the other retailers. So that was also like a lesson in how to sell on Amazon and Kobo and Barnes and Noble and Google Play and all that.
Yeah.
It was an adventure.
It was an adventure. And yes, because I still talk to people, and I'm sure you do too, people who are like, my goal is to get on the New York Times bestseller list. It is a really great marketing tool to use to say, hey, I'm a New York Times bestseller. And listen, 35,000 books is nothing to balk at. That is, yeah. I can't even fathom how you guys did that. Like was, on a grassroots level, I have no idea how you guys.
It was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And on top of that, we had the day before our book came out, Amazon or Apple pulled our pre-order and canceled all of our pre-orders. Because one of the stories had an Amazon link in the back of the story, and Apple will get very upset if they catch links to other retailers in your book. So we lost all of our Apple pre-orders. And without Apple pre-orders, you can't make the list. Yeah. So we had to like frantically, within 1 week span, we sold something like 5,000 books on Apple to be able to pull it off.
Wow. So, okay. Tell me, the next part of this is I want to talk about some of the business lessons that you've learned in this process. Hey, Rebels, I know you've been listening to The Rebel Maker for a hot minute, and you're probably listening for a couple reasons. One, you're thinking about writing a book. Two, you wrote the book and now you don't know what the hell to do with it. Or three, you need help marketing the book that you've already done because you're falling flat on sales. Great. I got just the thing for you. Go to the website, rebelqueen.co. Book a call with me. Here's what's going to happen. One, I'm going to give you an action plan for exactly what you need to do next. Whatever that next step is, writing it, publishing it, marketing it. And also, I'm going to give you an opportunity to ask any question that you have. Go to the website, rebelqueen.co. Book a call with me.
Well, I think, you know, there's the look at the business, like I said before, is three separate things. There's me as a writer writing as a business. There's the publishing side of it, which is like figuring out all of your tools and mechanisms for publishing and the channels you're going to want to use. And of course, then there's the marketing, which is folds inside the publishing business, but you have to have a different mindset. Publishing is all about packaging the product. And then the adjacent to that is the marketing of the product that's been packaged. And so I guess one of the things I learned for myself that was really important for me early on is that I had to write every day. That doesn't work for everybody. And some people actually feel tremendous pressure if they're told they have to write every day. So I don't say that's universal advice, but I do say that you should be thinking about your story every day so that when you do sit down to write, you don't have to go back and read three chapters or something like that. So doing things to keep the story fresh in your mind is great because you'll be more productive when you write. And for me, I find that the best way to write for myself is to never look back. When I'm writing my rough draft, I only go forward because if I look back, I start re-editing and editing. And what I've always discovered is that 99% of the books I've written, I'll get to the middle of the third act and I'll be like, oh, shoot. There's this thing. And if I do this thing, this book will be amazing. Like all these threads will come together, but I have to rewrite chapters 2 and 3, make it all work. Cause I got to lay in all the foreshadowing and put in the early connections and all that. And if I'd been honing and editing those chapters, I would have wasted all that time and effort. So your productivity as an author is really important from a business perspective. Like you're in a way, you're your own employee who has to create a product and you have to make it in a reasonable amount of time. If you want to do this as a business, you can't take years to write a book. Ideally, I think that most authors, if they were to focus and work on it, writing a book in 2 months is not that hard to do. Yeah. Most people can write 1,000 words a day. And if you were to be able to put 3 hours a day into writing, you could write a 90,000 word book in a month. And I did that back when I had a full-time job. I was able to write 3 hours a day and pull that off. But I always say people should have weekends off. So I change it to 2 months, but it's because that's the part is producing a product. And I think that one of the things I learned is that if I wrote every day and wrote a lot and really focused on it, kept my mind on my story, I didn't have to wait for the muse or inspiration anymore. Like my creativity became something I could just turn on and off like a faucet. And I would just sit down and say, I'm going to write this story now. And I would just do it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right that you say that because sometimes I think, even for myself included, I just said earlier, sometimes I can't even sit down and write like a social media post. And I have found personally that the longer that I'm taking in between doing things and I don't make it become a habit, then it's a constant struggle. But those things that I've noticed, like when I get into a flow of doing things on a regular basis, it becomes easier. My voice becomes more defined and I am finding inspiration in the everyday things that I could turn into, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's so for all of us, it's a great way to be more productive, is just to be in your story more often, be writing, even just be like making notes about what you think you might do next or something like that. Actually, one of the tricks I learned too for being really productive every time I sit down to write is don't stop writing at the end of a scene. Don't stop writing at the end of a chapter. Because then what you do is when you sit down the next day, you're starting with this blank page and you have to now intro a new scene, get everything rolling. So what you should do, you should stop in the middle of an argument or the middle of some sort of conflict or something like that. Because when you sit down the next day, you'll be like, oh yeah, it's like, he said that, she's going to say this, and someone's going to throw a fist or whatever it ends up being. And then also I leave bullet points for myself every time I stop writing too. So when I sit down, I'm just like, okay, here's where I am, here are the bullet points. And I just take off again without having to go back and reread stuff and whatnot. And that productivity hack is how I wrote so many books, was just being in the story all the time. From a business perspective, like from the publishing side of things, my biggest thing there is really having fine-tuned systems. I worked in software development for 20 years, so I managed teams upwards of 30 people and whatnot. So I got really good at working on process and systems and removing obstacles. And so one of the things I would do is I had my blurb and my cover designed. Usually the blurb was done, the cover was designed usually before I started writing. And my editor was booked and everything like that. So that when I finished writing the book, all the different pieces would just start flowing along. Whereas a lot of authors, they don't start thinking about the next step until the prior step is done. And that can make this whole process of producing a book really long. If you've got everything really lined up, you can take a book from writing the words "the end" to have it in reader's hands a week later. Like it can, you can an editor that's good at their jobs that you can book in advance can actually have your book edited in 4 or 5 days. And if you have a good relationship with the editor, you can usually get through their edits in a day. And then it's just a matter of publishing the book and getting it out there. So I find that most authors from a publishing standpoint spend way too much time from writing the end to getting the book in readers' hands. And sometimes it's 2 or 3 times longer than it took to write the book. And I'm just like, no, you should be writing the next book by then.
Okay, so let me ask you this, because you just said something that I have never done. And I want to know why you're doing this and if you've had to make any adjustments. And that's doing the cover before you start writing. So I guess my question is twofold. Why do you do that? And 2, have you ever found that once the cover is done, you get the cover done, you write the book, and you're like, oh, dang it, it no longer fits. So I need to go back and edit the cover.
I've had that happen like maybe 2 or 3 times, but it's usually been a small edit. Like I need to change a little bit of the setting or maybe add another character onto the cover or something like that. I've never had to completely have a cover redone because of that. And also because when you do a cover for a book, a lot of authors really get wrapped around the axle about trying to depict a scene from the book. That's not really necessary. What your cover needs to do is it needs to signal genre and the major tropes. And so as long as your cover is doing that and it's not like misrepresenting the book, then it can be fine almost with whatever is on it. So that's part of it too, is once you do dozens and dozens of books in the same genre, you get pretty good at knowing just what should be on the cover. And also like I did 90 covers with the same cover artist. So we just knew what to do. I'm like, hey, I need this character. I need some spaceships and some pew-pew. Make it happen and even produce the cover for me, you know?
Yeah, you guys have a great relationship then. So, okay, let's talk about this. You said tropes. Mm-hmm. So can you define what tropes are for maybe someone who does not understand?
Sure. That? Yeah. A trope is a common theme that is found within a story. And it could be some sort of major element of the story, like rags to riches, like Aladdin has a rags to riches trope in it. And that's also like a major theme of the story. But another trope could be like that there's nanobots as a trope. And they might not be a huge part of the story. Maybe there's just nanobots that are there to make medicine just more convenient or something like that in a sci-fi story. So that's also a trope. It could be something along the lines of every coffee shop owner has a cat. That's a trope. And readers read for tropes. The tropes define their genres. And some tropes actually are so big that they almost are the genre as well. But every story is packed with tropes too. Every story has hundreds of tropes in it. And certain tropes are iconic. For example, I write science fiction, but I write far future science fiction. And so a trope in far future science fiction that shows on the cover is a bunch of spaceships in space around some planet that's not Earth. Because you want to say, hey, there's lots of ships out there in space and we're not all just living around Earth. That signals far future. Whereas if you see a character in what looks like a slightly more advanced city than modern, and you're like, well, that could be a near future science fiction story or more of a modern science fiction thriller. So the lost colony ship or the big mega fleet out there, something like that's a trope too. And so you can convey all those things on the cover once you know the shorthand for the tropes. And that's what gets readers to stop scrolling and say, hey, this cover looks like it has the things I like reading about. They don't think of them as tropes, really, but for them, they're just like the story elements that they like to read about. And your cover signals all that, and then they'll pick it up.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, okay, let me ask you this, because there's some more questions I want to ask you, but I want to get through these next couple things. So practical tips. Do you have any practical tips when someone is in the process, and it can be anyone, because we talked a little bit about all of it, about writing, about publishing, about marketing. What are some practical tips that someone can take away from this to implement in their writing, publishing, and marketing practice?
Well, I think one of the things I talk to a lot of authors, and they have convoluted processes where they're writing in Scrivener, and then they bundle all together into a Word doc to get it to their editor, and then their editor goes through it, and they copy and paste chapters back into Scrivener, produce the book, and then throw it at Vellum. That sounds terrible. And also, it sounds like a great way to make lots of mistakes, is also what it sounds like. And so I talk to a lot of authors, I'm like, what are you getting out of this? And they're like, well, I can rearrange chapters in Scrivener or something like that. And I'm like, that's a lot of effort to be able to drag and drop chapters around. So I do everything in Word. I start writing in Word. My editor does everything in Word, and my final formatting is all done in Word, because I want to really streamline my process. So that if I say, for example, I want to make a change to a book, or I want to update my back matter in 127 books, being able just to go in and paste in some text into Word document and then just upload that Word document to Amazon is so much easier than all these other steps. So a lot of it is streamlining the process and making it so that you have as few steps as possible to get to publish. And I think practically as well, things like getting your covers in advance, or at least booking time with your cover designer and booking time with your editor, so that when you get your book done, they can be rolling with it fairly quickly, is really important too. And then the other thing I think that a lot of authors need to really think about doing a lot is your newsletter is your most valuable. Well, next to your books, your newsletter is your most valuable asset. And growing your newsletter should be one of the main tasks that authors do, because in every other scenario, like every way that authors sell books, we don't have the relationship with the consumer. The retailers have the relationship with the consumer. So our newsletter is our way of having the relationship with the consumer so that we can, you know, talk to them and get them to buy our new book, our next book and whatnot. And we control that rather than having to rely on these retailers to reach out to the consumers and everything for us.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about that specifically, because I know when you're marketing fiction versus nonfiction, like it is a mm-hmm. whole different beast and a whole different best practices way of doing things. So how did you build your newsletter in writing fiction books?
A lot of mainly the way you do it when you're writing fiction books is by having giveaways. So at the end of the book, you tease something, like as you're writing the book, maybe character XYZ drops some hints about this thing that happened to them in the past. And at the end of the book, it's, hey, by the way, do you want to know the story about this character and why these things happened? Click here, sign up for my newsletter, and I'll send you that story for free, is one of the ways of doing it. And that works really well for getting people who've already started reading your books. Another thing to do is make what's called a reader magnet. And these exist for fiction and nonfiction. And in fiction, what you're going to do is you're going to write a story that takes place right before the first book in the series and features either the main character or a side character. Because sometimes the main character in a series has to have a revelation at the very beginning of the book, that the first book, that sort of like upsets the status quo and makes it so that that their story can happen. And so a lot of times, if you were to write that character's prequel, it would be a whole different type of story almost. So sometimes you have to write about maybe their mentor's backstory or something. So you write this story, 10,000 words or so, and then you put that out there through a variety of mechanisms where people can find the book, but they have to surrender their email address to get it. And that gets them reading this story, and then they funnel into your series. So those are the two best ways of doing it. There's lots of other ways too, with like authors do multi-author promotions and stuff like that to capture email addresses. But those ones are less valuable because they might not have ever signed up because of you. They might have signed up for something else. And then when you email them, these people don't care because they weren't interested in your book. But doing stuff where you're basically giving people shorter stories for free is basically what you do. And of course, in nonfiction, it's the same sort of thing, right? Like I have a nonfiction book about Facebook ads. So I have this short little like 20-page PDF basically that says, is your book ready to run ads? Do you have an ad-ready book? And that sort of gets them all primed. And we give that away for free in exchange for their email address and get them into that series.
Yeah, nice. All right. So I'm going to ask you something else, because you do Facebook ads and you are building email newsletter lists. And then the third thing that I wanted to ask you about, you were talking about getting your book in front of the right audience mm-hmm. at the beginning when we were talking, and you specifically said, I wasn't giving my book to the right authors to throw out as like a shout out. Do you still do that? Do you still connect with people that are giving your book shout outs? And
all the time. Yeah. It's in the author world, it's usually referred to as a newsletter swap, when you do those, it's not like your entire newsletter is about someone else's book. You're sending out your regular newsletter, and then there's a section underneath that says, oh, and by the way, this other author has this sale, or they've got this new book, you should check it out. It's maybe even a snippet of a blurb or something like that. And they're not going to sell you 1,000 books by doing that. but they are going to sell you some books and it costs you exactly $0 to do it. So it's a great way to do it. And it's like a multiplier for your mailing list, because now you have access to this other 5,000 or 6,000 people on someone else's mailing list. And it costs you nothing, which is amazing.
Yeah. So let me ask you this though. But when you're doing that, are you making sure that the content of your book is matching with the content? So you want to reach like the
right. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If I was to get a romance author, I wrote a new book, put out there and swap with a romance author, and all these romance readers come and see my book, they're not going to buy. They're going to bounce and leave the page. Yeah. And then Amazon's going to be like, oh, this book doesn't sell. So I really do make sure that when I do swaps, I'm finding authors that write the same kind of book that I do, that I know their readers will love my book. And I'll also say no to authors who come to me and their book is too far off from mine. Because not only is it not going to work well for them, but it also hurts my brand too, to be recommending books that won't match my readers' interest. Because my readers will be less inclined to take my suggestions.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. Yeah. All right, so here's the next question. So what are the best books that have impacted your life, your thought processes, your decision-making? Like, what do I need to be reading?
So I am not the kind of person that reads a lot of nonfiction books to learn things. So I don't have a lot of self-help books I've read. I did read this one book by, her name is Rachel something. It's called We Should All Be Millionaires. And that was a really interesting book because she's a female entrepreneur. And
is one thing she was Rogers?
Yes, Rachel Rogers. Yeah.
Yes.
Like yeah. Her. She made two really important insights that I thought was really fascinating. She said that there's lots of women entrepreneurs out there, but they're all solopreneurs. Like, women aren't upping their game enough to hire people. And men still control something between 95 and 97% of the money in the world. If you want to change the world, control the money. As long as men control all this money, women won't get the changes in the world that they want to have, which I thought was really interesting. And then at one point, she was also talking about how she was agonizing over spending some money on something. And her husband said to her, why do you always treat every dollar like it's the last one you're ever going to earn? And I thought, wow, that's a really interesting mindset thing to think about. Yeah. Like, I can make more money. Like, if I spend this money on some way to build my business, to buy a bunch of covers, to do a model photo shoot, to buy a better laptop so I can write faster, it's going to make my business better and I'll make more money. And I think it's like a mindset shift to move out of the scarcity mindset into an abundance mindset, which was an interesting thing to pull out of that. Another book that I read, that it's a software development book, but it's called A Year Without Pants. And it's about this guy who went to work.
It sounds fun. I just got to throw this.
Yeah, right?
Like, I work from home, so yes.
It's about this guy that went to work for WordPress and got to learn how their business worked and whatnot. And it was where I first was introduced to this concept called Lean. It's a software development concept where the whole idea is that you prototype things. You prototype them very well, but you prototype them in the most scaled down way possible to see if there's like a market for it. And a premise out of that is fail fast. Stop doing the things that aren't working. And I think that's one of the things a lot of authors are doing, is they're not looking carefully enough at what's not working and stopping to do it. There's every author that I work with on ads and promotions and whatnot, they've got some ads that are working great, and they've got ads that are consuming all of the profits from the ads that are working great. But if they were identifying the ads that weren't working and they stopped running them, these ads would actually be making them a ton of money rather than making them effectively not enough to even keep doing it. So yeah. It's called fail fast as a principle out of that. It requires you to be introspective and retrospect on what worked and what hasn't worked in the last couple of things I've done. And then also say, I'm not going to do anything unless I have a way of measuring whether or not successful. Because if I can't measure whether or not successful, how do I know if I keep doing it or not? Yeah.
Okay. So this is really good. I want to talk about writing wise for just a second, but before we do that, I do want to throw out like how they can find you specifically as an author. So listen, if you guys want to follow Mal, you can find her at aeon14.com, and that's aeon14.com. And I'm just going to throw out your Instagram as well. Instagram is mallory.cooper. That's mallorie.cooper, C-P-E-R. And then you can also get on the Facebook group with her at the Aeon 14 fans.
Yep.
So check her out there. I want to talk a little bit about Writing Wives, because you started out as an author.
Yep.
You've honed your skills, and now you are helping other authors become rock stars at what they're doing through Writing Wives with Jill. And I just took your Facebook Ads 14 or 5-day challenge last week. Like, you guys are so amazing at what you're doing. So I want everybody to go to your group. If you're an author, you need to be in your group. And I don't care what you're writing, you need to go to the Writing Wives Facebook group, and just tell me what all services you're providing at Writing Wives.
The main thing that we do, our primary thing is Facebook ad consulting. I still believe that Facebook is the best advertising platform for authors. It reaches 4 billion humans. Nothing else has the same reach as Facebook. TikTok's only 1 billion, for example. And it also, Facebook has a lot of older people on it. And the majority of readers are older because they've got more time to read in general. That. And also in 2 years, half the American population will be over 65 years old, which is mind-blowing, right? 170 million people. Yeah, wow. 170 million people over 65 in 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that makes sense. And older people have more time to read because they're not running careers anymore. They don't have kids, that sort of thing. So I believe very firmly in Facebook ads, and we do a lot of consulting with that. That consumes pretty much my entire day on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I have dozens of authors who have come to me and said that the work they did with me, either one-on-one or taking a course or something like that, has made it so they could write as a full-time career. Just understanding how to advertise their books. And that once you understand how to advertise your books and how to reach readers via Facebook, you can extend that knowledge to other platforms as well. We were for a while doing websites because I've built thousands of websites in my life and I want to help authors get better websites, but it's a lot of time and you can't really charge that much for websites because they're commodities. We do that every now and then for someone who has really special needs, but we also teach classes on how to identify genre and tropes, how to research your genre and understand how the people who are selling well are conveying this information to readers. And so that they, when you do your cover and your blurb and all that stuff, you can convey the right information to your readers as well. We help people with launches and we have classes on how to do a launch plan and how to maximize your launch. And then we also run a mastermind group too, where we actually have weekly meetings with people in one-on-ones and we coach them on all aspects of their author business. So a whole plethora of things that we do.
Oh my gosh, that's so awesome. I love it. Okay, so you can find them at thewritingwives.com and then on Facebook at The Writing Wives. Mallory, this has been so great connecting
Thanks.
With you. I could probably come up with 75 more questions, but
I can talk forever too. So if you had them, I'd keep going.
Listen, we will do that one day. I've already talked to Jill. Like, I'm coming to visit you guys and hang out.
Oh, wow.
I totally want to just, I've never been that far up in the Northeast. So New York is the most northern I have been. So I would just love to come and hang out with you guys. Thank you. Thank you so much for,
thanks for having me.
Like, your wealth of information. I super appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks.
Friend, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Rebel Maker, where I not only support, but also encourage rebellious behavior, rebellious action, and doing the thing that no one thought you could do. Hell yes to you. If you're digging what you're hearing, finding inspiration and actionable items for your next step, then please do all the things. Subscribe, share me with your besties, and send me a message. I'd love to chat. Cheers to your success.